Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect now. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ann Evans. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Anthony. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining our Good News Manufacturing Day call. I'm Ann Evans, U.S. Department of Commerce, Director here in Connecticut. We are recording this call, and we'll send you early next week the link to the recording and any materials that the speakers give us. You know, we've all been going through difficult times in the past 8 months, but manufacturing has remained good news in Connecticut. We have 7 speakers today. Our U.S. Senator and manufacturing champion, Senator Chris Murphy, Will Lennon, VP of Quality at one of our largest manufacturers in Connecticut, Electric Boat, Tony Uphoff, CEO of ThomasNet, the leading manufacturing data and resource platform. We have Jill Mayer of Beat Industries and President of Manufacturer CT, Jeff Rossi, who is the manufacturing sector chair at Kohn-Resnick, Colin Cooper, our CT manufacturing czar, and our good friend, Kazim Kazaronian, who is the dean of the UConn School of Engineering. All leaders with positive messages and takeaways about manufacturing. Thank you, Senator Murphy, for being with us today, and please begin.
Well, thanks a lot, Ann. Once again, we rely on you, we lean on you in order to bring us all together and remind us of all of the good news stories that we can tell about Connecticut manufacturing, and I'm thrilled on a very busy day for us in the Senate to take a few minutes to join you and help you kick off this call. Great to be on the call with Will and Tony and Jill and Jeff. Colin, thanks for your leadership at the state level, and Kazim, thank you for everything you and your team are doing at UConn to really build a world-class engineering program that we're going to rely on in the next several decades in our state. Listen, obviously, as Ann pointed out, there's been plenty of bad news over the course of 2020, and many of us are very eager to get through this year into the next, and our thoughts are with all of those at the White House today as they try to understand the scope of the outbreak there. It's hit us hard in Connecticut. We obviously have done better than most states with respect to recovery, but as we saw today with the latest labor data, our recovery is looking a little bit less V-shaped. You know, initially, it looked as if we might be able to regain at the same pace that we lost jobs. That does not appear to be happening. There's a leveling off that is concerning, but maybe not totally unexpected, given the fact that for many small and medium-sized companies, this pandemic presents itself as a potential extinction moment, which is why we have been so focused on trying to authorize record amounts of federal dollars through largely the PPP program to keep small and medium businesses, including manufacturers, alive. I have been a big proponent of a follow-on program to PPP, a program that would be more targeted and more flexible at the same time. And my hope is that if we can pass legislation this year, either before or at the end of the election, an additional COVID response bill, that it'll include additional assistance programs for small and medium-sized businesses. What I mean by more targeted and more flexible is that I think that we don't need to be as broad-based as we were with PPP. I think we've got to look with some precision at sales in the second quarter of this year, or perhaps the third quarter of this year, compared to the same quarter last year. Find those businesses that are have enough sales to be able to stay alive, enough revenue to be able to make it, but have a serious enough diminution that they need help. And lastly, make sure that funding is a little bit more flexible. PPP was really designed as a substitute for unemployment compensation, thus almost all of it needed to be spent on labor. I think that this next go-around, we've got to allow businesses to use federal dollars, at least temporarily, on a broader array of costs, including fixed costs. Stay tuned, and I'm always looking forward to input. In Connecticut, though, we do have some real opportunities as we seek to rebuild our economy stronger, and I think that's going to be the key in 2021. Are we just going to try to reconstruct what we had, or are we going to learn lessons? And one of the lessons that we have learned is that we as a nation have been far too dependent on an international healthcare product supply chain. Now, many of you know, and Ann knows certainly, that I've been making this case ad nauseum with respect to defense spending. 10 years ago, when I was a rank-and-file House member, I created something called the Buy American Caucus in the House of Representatives to make the pitch that we needed to spend more of our taxpayer dollars on domestic goods for the defense industry. And my argument was that was just a smart use of taxpayer dollars to create jobs here, but it also was very worrying to me that more and more of our defense supply chains were linked to countries overseas that might temporarily have interests aligned with the United States, but no guarantee that supply line continues. We're now seeing that same exposure in the healthcare space. And I do think there's a decent amount of bipartisan agreement on this. And so I would expect to see in 2021, Congress considering legislation really providing for some guarantee mechanisms that more of that domestic healthcare supply chain be rooted in the United States. So that's a real opportunity for us in Connecticut, because so much of the high value added precision manufacturing of components that go into modern medical equipment are done in Connecticut. And so I just preview that for you as you try to prepare for the future. Of course, with Will on the line from Electric Boat, we always know how rooted our manufacturing success is in defense manufacturing. I don't see any way forward other than keeping on track to build attack submarines and Columbia-class submarines at recent record paces. The Black Hawk follow-on program will start ramping up soon. We hope that will be, and we expect that will be, a Connecticut-produced product. And though engine sales are obviously going to suffer here, we are continually looking at additional assistance for the airline industry because we simply can't have it be an extinction event for airline companies or airline manufacturers and have our economy be able to rebound. Probably most worrying is those engine sales, which are going to take a while to come back, but it is the military engine sales that perhaps can help fill in some of the gap as sales slow on the commercial side. I still see a lot of good news here. I think there's assistance programs coming that will help. I think there's going to be a recommitment to American manufacturing, especially in the medical supply chain, that will provide new avenues of business for us. I still see robust defense spending coming into Connecticut. I just know that our governor, and I'm sure Colin will talk about this, is still focused, just as Governor Lamont was, on that workforce issue. And I'm excited to help fund some of those initiatives through federal dollars as well. So I really want to thank Ann for letting me be a part of this call. As I constantly remind folks, I'm a product of Connecticut manufacturing. My great grandfather and grandfather came to New Britain from Poland, went to work at Fafner, and built a middle-class family based on good manufacturing jobs. I get the honor of a lifetime to serve in the United States Senate because of that history, because of that legacy, but also because of our president. We still have a bigger share of our economy in Connecticut dedicated to manufacturing than the average U.S. state. We're on the high end of that list. And though people may not see the factories in the way they used to, because they don't exist on Main Street, they exist in industrial parks, they're no less important. I know that. Senator Blumenthal knows that. The House delegation knows that. And that's why we work so closely with Ann and her team. So, Ann, thanks for letting me be a part of this. I'll look forward to getting the download on everything else that's discussed here, and to everybody on the call, just know that I and my team are just a phone call away. So please let us know how we can help.
Great. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you coming on, and I know you're busy. So our next call, our next speaker is Will Lennon from Electric Boat. Will.
Thank you. And thank you, Senator Murphy, and on behalf of the men and women of Electric Boat, I'd like to thank you for your continued strong leadership and support of the important work EB does for both the U.S. Navy and our country. So thank you, sir. This is really a great time for Electric Boat. We have a tremendous amount of work going on across the enterprise. We enjoy a strong backlog ahead of us, and we're investing in the facilities and the resources necessary to support that future growth. So if you look at Electric Boat today, we have five Virginia-class submarines under construction in Groton and two post-shakedown availabilities going on as well. We've started our planning and preparation work to perform an engineering overhaul of the USS Hartford, a 688-class ship, and yesterday marked the official start of construction on the lead ship of the Columbia-class, really a major milestone for this important program for the nation. A majority of this near-term work will take place on Columbia at our manufacturing facility at Quonset Point in Rhode Island, and then the final assembly and test efforts will start up in Groton in around 2023. To support that upcoming work, General Dynamics is continuing to make strong investments, building an entirely new 200,000-square-foot South Yard assembly building in Groton to support the Columbia program. During the steady-state construction, this facility will employ up to 1,400 skilled shipbuilders involved in the construction of Columbia. And so we'll need some additional skilled resources to support that increase in workload. Recently, we had a short pause in our hiring during the initial phases of the COVID outbreak, but we've hired over 500 people in Groton since we restarted hiring in May. And we project a strong hiring demand to support Columbia as that program starts up. And to ensure we have that trained and qualified shipbuilders in place, we'll continue to work with the congressional delegations, the state of Connecticut, and our educational partners to maintain robust hiring and training pipelines to support our needs. Again, I'd like to thank Senator Murphy for inviting Electric Boat to participate and for his continued support in what EB does for the Navy and the country. I'd like to turn it over now to Tony Upoff, CEO of ThomasNet. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and I want to as well thank the Senator for everything he does for he and his team do for manufacturing, and thank you very much for Ann Evans for coordinating this and also including us. As a bit of background for some of the data I'm going to share with you, every second an engineer, procurement professional, or MRO sources a product or evaluates a supplier on the ThomasNet.com platform, and that provides us a remarkable window into the industrial economy. And make no mistake, sourcing slowed down, and we clearly saw a dip. But for the last three straight months, we've seen a, I would actually say, stark lift in sourcing and sustained lift. Our data also shows that 69% of manufacturers are actively looking at reshoring to North America. That's actually up from 54% in February. And of the categories, the most needed products and services that are companies that are looking to source domestically, they're metals, machining tools and parts, fabricated materials, PPE, and packaging. I don't think it would be an understatement to suggest that the unique dynamics of the time we're living through and the acceleration of reshoring is one of the biggest opportunities that American manufacturing has seen in the last 70 years. Echoing what we just heard as well, we're seeing that 38% of manufacturing companies are actually hiring right now. Surprises a lot of people. There are jobs available. If anything, I think, you know, we've talked about the skills shortage before. We still see that. Of the companies, and the senator was talking about companies that have, you know, near extinction events, one of the things that we've tracked that's been really remarkable to see is the level of agility that U.S. manufacturers have demonstrated. we have seen over 5,500 companies pivot business models to be able to produce medical equipment and or PPE equipment during the COVID, and we created a COVID response center for these folks. It was amazing to see how fast they were able to do that, not only benefiting their own business, but certainly helping the greater good out there. That's a reflection of the continued acceleration of the adoption of advanced manufacturing technology. The companies that have fared the best are the companies that have been investing in those areas. The other two big trends that we're seeing is there's been a dramatic acceleration, probably not a surprise, of the digital transformation of industrial sales and marketing. So think of this as the front office of manufacturing. That has been a laggard compared to factory floors. Boy, is that accelerating now. And then the last just point I would make is that while 90% of manufacturers through our data said that they felt an impact from the COVID-19 pandemic, 91% are now saying that they believe North American manufacturing is in the process of recovering. So I think a lot of good news and a lot to be very, very optimistic about. And so it's my pleasure to now hand the mic to Jill Mayer, CEO of Beat Industries.
Thanks, Tom. And thank you, Anne, for coordinating this. I'm actually really happy to provide kind of a small business perspective on this call. Beat is a 106-year-old, fifth-generation family manufacturing business. We've got two locations in Connecticut. In Milford, we manufacture custom electronic pins. In Cheshire, we manufacture commercial plumbing fixture trim. So in total, we employ close to 50 employees, and between employee wages, factory expenses, and local suppliers, this small business of ours pumps about $4 million a year back into the state economy. I'm beyond grateful that at the onset of the pandemic, manufacturers were deemed essential in Connecticut. I'm super grateful for our loyal and dedicated employees who came in every day to keep up with production. And I'm grateful for the PPP funding so we could keep every single one of them employed. In the midst of COVID, our company managed to move our software into the cloud so that our office team could work remotely and reduce exposure to others. We upgraded our ISO quality certification to an automotive certification to attract new customers. We developed a prototype of our next generation machine, which, you know, when we can afford enough of them, we hope will triple our production efficiencies. So we've accomplished all of that while managing through the coronavirus roller coaster of splitting shifts, enforcing new safety protocols, and finding enough PPE for everybody. I'm really proud of our team for their grit and their determination. Manufacturer CT, formerly known as NHMA, where Beat is a member, is Connecticut's largest manufacturing association. And like Beat, it's also been around for over 100 years and managed to push through COVID, turning it from an obstacle into an opportunity. Manufacturer CT revealed its new brand at our first ever virtual annual meeting in June. We retained nearly all of our members and even recruited several new manufacturing members. We brought on new committee chairs, all of whom, these are all volunteers within the manufacturing community. We beefed up our marketing efforts and held a ton of online manufacturing webinars to help our members navigate through COVID. This is all evidence in my mind that manufacturers in the state are extremely resilient. If you look around, you'll find there's so many opportunities to help small and medium-sized manufacturers grow and thrive. Couple to note, in my mind, the successful apprenticeship program through the Department of Labor, the generous CECD match grant through the Manufacturing Innovation Fund, the state worker training programs, the state-funded worker training programs like Skill Up and 180 Skills, and the wonderful teachers at our technical high schools and the community colleges' advanced manufacturing centers. Are there challenges in this industry? Absolutely. What industry doesn't have them? But I think today it's great that we remember to pause and celebrate our accomplishments, our tenacity to punch through adversity, and the myriad of resources in the state to help us through them. Today on Manufacturing Day, we celebrate manufacturing in Connecticut, the gritty manufacturing companies who make this state their home, and the fulfilling, I think, manufacturing careers that come with them. So thank you. Now you're going to hear from my colleague and friend, Jeff Rothke. Jeff?
Thank you, Jill. And obviously, a lot of great positive news today, and Jill, a very tough act to follow. Nice job. I'm going to talk about some of the positive tax outcomes and the CARES Act and how manufacturers are benefiting through some of these programs. And hopefully I don't put everybody to sleep by talking about tax code, but it's cash related, refund related, and credit related. So hopefully everyone can get jazzed up about that aspect of it. The loan PPP loan program is in the final stages of forgiveness here, and there's been the June passage of the Paycheck Protection Program Flexibility Act, which has come up with the Treasury and Small Business Administration coming out with two new versions of their forgiveness app. I know everybody's knee-deep in those right now, so there's a fully revised version that should help streamline the process, and there's an easy version. So we always love the easy version. On the technical tax side of things, there's a great benefit to manufacturers that have incurred net operating losses in 2018, 2019, and 2020. Those losses were previously prohibited from being carried back. Now, the legislation has opened up those losses to be carried back to the five preceding years, and you can generate cash refunds, which can help with immediate cash flow needs. The losses were also subject to an 80% limitation in prior years, and that limitation has been lifted. So a lot of our clients are taking advantage of that and pulling back losses into years with higher tax rates, et cetera, and converting to much-needed cash. The our research and development credit has been there, and it's not a direct outcome of the COVID era, but it's definitely something that manufacturers should keep top of mind. And we always want to let people know that that is not just about the white lab coats and creating new process and new products. It's about any type of improvement. It's a very broad range of legislation that a lot of people don't take fully advantage of. Those credits are both federal and state, and you can actually go back and claim credits in prior years if you haven't done so, and certain manufacturing businesses are even eligible to offset payroll taxes with these credits. So there's a lot of great news surrounding the research and development tax credits. An area that most manufacturers have not taken advantage of, but there's still time. If you have not taken a PPP loan, or if you are ineligible for one reason or another, there is an employee retention credit as part of the CARES Act, and that credit allows for up to $10,000 per employee for qualified wages. So that could be a very significant benefit, and we always love credits. Credits are dollar for dollar, whereby the deductions are effectuated by the tax rate. So the employee retention credit is something to look into if you have not taken a PPP loan or if you were ineligible for some reason. There was also a limitation on interest that was put in place and the amount of interest that you can deduct. That limitation has been lifted, so that's great. That also allowing greater flexibility to the taxpayer. There's a lot of eligibility on accelerated depreciation, and we're advising our clients to look into, and Jill mentioned the equipment needs and how she's gaining efficiencies with new generation equipment. There's no better time. There's 100% bonus that's eligible on new equipment, which is great for manufacturers. One thing that's really nice that we see people taking advantage of, it's almost a two-for-one if that 100% bonus depreciation is pushing you into a tax loss. You can actually carry back the loss and get that refund from prior years. It's not that often that we see two-for-one, so that's great. One thing to also note during times like this that we always view as a positive is the effective and efficient transfer of wealth for your manufacturing business through estate planning. And right now, the gift tax exemption is at a high level, and there's definitely some certain strategic tax advantages to manufacturers and business owners as part of the transfer of wealth. So I didn't want to get too deep in the weeds on tax, and I know I had a lot of tough acts to follow here. I'm going to turn it over to Colin Cooper.
Thank you, Jeff, and good afternoon, everyone, and delighted to be here to talk about some of the good news in Connecticut manufacturing. I was feeling pretty good about things this morning after participating in an event up at Nuntuck, coordinated by our friends at CCAT, focused on career opportunities for young folks in manufacturing. I'm feeling even better right now after listening to Will, Tony, and particularly Jill on what's going on. And that sort of reflects my experience as I've gone through the state. You know, everyone on the phone knows that Connecticut was hit early and hard by the pandemic. And it was just about 6 months ago when we all felt like the world had come off its axis. But now, despite some recent uptick in cases, Connecticut's in the top quartile in the nation in public health outcomes. And we achieved this, through a combination of early countermeasures, thinking through what to open and what to close, and a high level of adherence to best health practices by our state residents, as well as a measured approach to reopening that we're still going through now. And as Jill mentioned, it was back in March, when we were determining what to close, we made the somewhat unusual or uncommon decision to deem all of manufacturing essential, and thus manufacturing stayed open. And as we anticipated, the manufacturing community took this responsibility very seriously. I was amazed at how quickly and how rapidly companies developed and implemented safe workplace policies and procedures. And as a result, we've achieved great health outcomes in the manufacturing community. So thank you, everyone out there, for doing that. In addition, the Connecticut manufacturers did an outstanding job of pivoting to use their capabilities and capacity to make urgently needed medical equipment and supplies. And we heard Tony talk about that. In Connecticut, we had distilleries, breweries, and cosmetic companies pivot to make hand sanitizers. We had dairies diverting bottles to those manufacturers to package the sanitizers. We had a football equipment manufacturer pivot to make isolation and surgical gowns. We had a signage company that developed and designed a modular field hospital bed and that was used in various field hospitals set up throughout the state. We had numerous plastic companies pivot to make face shields, and the list goes on and on. So while we're, still a long way from normal, relatively, we're in better shape than our peer states. And that's as measured by Moody's back to normal index. And there are just some second quarter GDP results released. And again, I think our relative good standing is a function of all the good work that people on this phone call did. There's still a lot of uncertainty out there, but, as I'm speaking to manufacturing companies around the state, it's amazing that everyone now is focusing on the future. I mean, you heard Jill talk about even in the midst of the crisis, they were focusing on improving their business and positioning for the reemergence, and that holds true for manufacturers throughout the state. So, as a result of this pandemic and some structural changes in the business and educational communities that we're undergoing right now, the level of cooperation and coordination between business, state agencies, the educational community is at an all-time high. And I think there's a real opportunity to build on this cooperation and communication throughout the state and build it into a sustainable competitive advantage. There's an old adage that good companies gain market share in down markets, and I believe that holds true for states, and I think we're seeing that. While we still have some tough sledding ahead, and particularly I think, we got a tough 6 to 12 to 18 months ahead of us, but I believe that the creativity and resiliency that's demonstrated around our state by our residents and our manufacturing businesses really holds well for our long-term future. So thank you for your attention, and now I'll turn it over to Kasim from UConn.
Kazem, are you on mute? Hello, Kazem.
I'm here. Thank you very much. Thank you, Colin. Let me start by expressing our gratitude to Senator Murphy for his strong advocacy of every citizen in the state, but also for his advocacy of our wonderful education system in the state. And also, I want to thank Ann Evans for her focus on economic development in the state. My colleague here, Tony, mentioned reshoring, amazing statistics of reshoring of companies back to the United States. And actually, there has been some research lately released that shows that majority of these companies decide on the place in the United States that they would reshore to based on two factors. One is availability of advanced technology workforce, in particular where it relates to manufacturing, and the second one relates to the financial incentives and taxing issues in the place that they go to. And I know that Jeff talked about some of the taxing and financial issues, but University of Connecticut is a land-grant university in the state of Connecticut, and we produce more than 52% of the engineers in the state of Connecticut. Over the past 7 to 8 years, we have doubled the capacity and number of engineering graduates that we put out. And one of our main focus in the school is to support industry in the state of Connecticut. We have created various ways for industry to various gateways for industry to enter the university and to various support systems that we have, and we have made it as easy as it could possibly be to work with the university, with the faculty, with the students. At any given time, we have somewhere between 250 to 300 projects going on with various industries, including senior designs where teams of students tackle projects supported by industry, to more involved projects where graduate students and faculty work on some of the more advanced projects and problems that industry is facing. Technology Park, which we quickly call Tech Park or Innovation Partnership Building, which is the first building out of five buildings in Tech Park, is designed to support advanced manufacturing. In material characterization, in material design, we are the number one university and research center in the world with the facilities that we have and with the expertise that we have to support those facilities. Some of the recent projects that actually are a source of pride for the state of Connecticut, we have initiated an institute for underwater, we call it NIUVT, National Institute for Underwater Vehicle Technologies, which is designed in partnership with Electric Boat and University of Rhode Island to support submarine manufacturing, to provide to connect more than 200 engineering faculty that we have to this really wonderful partner that we have in the state of Connecticut. Senator Murphy has been instrumental in providing and connecting us to Pratt & Whitney and National Resources, and Air Force in particular. Over the past few years, we have received more than $10 million to support the research activities that, again, supports Pratt & Whitney, this critical component of manufacturing in the state of Connecticut. Again, we are here to support industry. COVID will end soon, and manufacturing, as Senator suggested, is going to flourish and flourish fast, and we are here to be a partner. Thank you, Anne, for the opportunity, and it's back to you.
Thank you, Kazem. Thank you, all the speakers. Okay, we're going to open up the lines for questions, and in a moment, the operator will come out and explain how to do that. I just have a couple of things that I want to mention. One is, don't forget, we're the Export Center, and we are open for anything. So we may all be working, teleworking, but you know how to find us. If your companies are interested in markets, we can help you with that. Also, the STEP grant funding, which comes from SBA to the state, Connecticut got a nice hunk of money, so that can help you with upgrading your website to global stuff, a whole bunch of things, and we'll be running some webinars on that. I also, one thing that wasn't mentioned that is always good news is Connecticut Center for Advanced Technology. CCAT out there in East Hartford does a fabulous job, and I think they've gotten some grants recently that have some really big impact on folks that are getting drawings from OEMs and helping them work with their own IT folks to get those drawings into your own equipment. And I think Colin has had some stuff on that, and we'll try to send you out some stuff on that also. So we can open up for questions. And Anthony, can you open the lines?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly. Your name is required to introduce your question. If you need to withdraw your question, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. It will take a few moments for the questions to come through. Please stand by.
Well, while we're waiting for questions, Colin, can you do a better job on what I screwed up on that grant you're getting on the drawings?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yeah, we just recently we applied with the Department of Defense for designation as a defense manufacturing community, and we were awarded that designation. You know, as I think the Senator mentioned, we obviously have a high density of defense activity in the state. And then we also applied for and won an award around a digital transformation initiative called the Digital Model Initiative. And it really is in and around model-based definition. And this is helping companies move from really sort of a two-dimensional environment where everything's governed by blueprints into a three-dimensional environment where everything goes back to what I would refer to as a smart model. So everything that's required is contained in that model, and we're going to be working with two engine suppliers, two sub-suppliers, and two helicopter suppliers to introduce this technology and embed it in their business, and that'll allow them to actually digitally link to their customers and create this digital thread, which should speed up, production, manufacturing, increase quality, and it's a technology that's going to be required on next generation DoD programs. So if we can learn that and embed that in our 700 defense manufacturers in the state, that gives us a competitive advantage for next generation programs. So it's an exciting opportunity, and you're right, we're working with a number of people, including UConn, CCSU, we're working with CCAT and CONCEPT, ACM, Naval Maritime Consortium. So there's a big group of stakeholders that we're working with, and we're very excited about the opportunity.
Great. Thank you, Colin. Anthony, do we have any questions?
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our first question comes from John Wilbrick. Go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, I have a question regarding the whole situation we have today where we have supply chain security issues with overseas products. And since we've had such a large commercial aviation downturn, I'm wondering if the U.S. government, I guess this is something for Senator Murphy, is looking at other ways of creating incentives to create new jobs beyond just the medical industry.
Senator Murphy had to leave the call. It's okay. If you can email me that question, I will get it to the senator, and we'll get a response for you. I don't think anybody really on this call, who's now on this call, can answer that real well. And I'm sorry, but the senator did have to leave the call.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Anthony, do we have any other questions?
I show no additional questions at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, speakers, and thank you, participants. And this is the first day of, or actually second day of National Manufacturing Month. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
all.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks again, Ann.
Thank you.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.